Well, I don't see what I can do without an amendment. I don't know.
How many amendments do you have? Now, would this include, would this cover the Lafayette Bridge?
I didn't.
It would be effective immediately, right?
It would be effective August 1st. I didn't think about start that day.
The Lafayette language look like?
I think it, it's actually more effective than the Lafayette language because of the way what's written currently is generic to transit. So MnDOT could say bus rapid transit covers that. So our design already handles like this requirement.
Good evening. I'm sorry that we're all here. I thought that it was getting a bit late on the House floor for us to meet again today. But apparently the goal of the leadership is to wrap up conference committee bills by midnight tonight. So we're going to do our best to meet that. I'm not sure if we'll be able to get through everything we have left to do in that amount of time. So I apologize to anybody who went home and had to come back, or anybody who went to a restaurant and had to come back. But we tried to be more reasonable and meet tomorrow during the day. But other people had other plans for us tonight. So, Senator Murphy, I don't know if we want to go through and just start adding the sections that we agree on. I know the Senate has some amendments drafted to clarify some of the sections. And if it's all right with you, I think it would make sense to just start going through the Senate offer sheet and adopting the provisions that we both agree on. I know Senator Dibble was working on an amendment related to the Pupil Transportation Safety Office. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that amendment ready to be considered.
I'm sure it's the A15 amendment.
You can explain it to us.
Yes, Madam Chair. The A15 amendment seeks to do is to create just to ask the folks who are going to be setting up the Pupil Transportation Safety Department office within the DPS just to consult with the various stakeholders, the folks who have some knowledge, expertise in student people transportation. So it says that when they assist in the development, interpretation, and implementation of laws and policies relating to school bus safety, they should consult with a stakeholder group that consists of representatives of the school board association, superintendents, directors of transportation, school bus employees, their representatives, and parent organizations. It also asks, I have a handout as well, Madam Chair, that asks that when they're working with the Board of Education to assist the school districts in developing comprehensive transportation policies, they also work on developing these best practices, on providing student transportation and best practices, and providing, establishing these model contracts when they're contracting for student transportation. It asks that in addition to all of the things that they keep track of around school bus employee background, license checks, etc., that they also keep track of driver turnover rate. I think that's a good thing. That's been the source of a lot of argument and contention. I think to keep track of that statistic to settle once and for all whether or not there's a correlation between bus driver turnover rate and safety issues. On line 13, I think it was making clear that they're keeping track of federal and state statutory requirements. And then on the licensing check, an important thing that also needs to be tracked is making sure that we're keeping track of controlled substance and alcohol testing requirements, all in conjunction with their role as primary role as in charge of public safety. So that's the amendment, Madam Chair. I think it goes a long way towards getting rid of some of the more anxiety-provoking proposals that are in various bills, including this one, yet still gets to, you know, tracking and keeping track of and providing the kind of consulting advice around these issues within this new office that we're setting up.
Senator Dibble, do you want to move the A-15 amendment at this time?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'll move the A-15 amendment to Senate language in Section 50 on page R-35.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olsen.
While we're on this issue, I was talking with Major Tershner just a little bit ago, and there's some logistics problems in working all this office out. In the State Patrol says that they can get the three bus inspectors, the three additional, so there'd be 15 inspectors and then a chief inspector. But, and then it could have the head of the office. But to get the three troopers, they believe they would wait until probably this class of state troopers graduates, the 40 troopers, and then they would probably hire a more senior, or more senior troopers would go into this office, but they probably wouldn't be filled until January of 09. So, because unless the major would want to address this, but it's kind of like they don't want to pull three more troopers off the road right now until the graduates get here. So that'll be some fiscal savings. We estimate maybe $250,000 fiscal savings also. So
Senator Olsen, would you like to move the language at page 3 of the Senate offer sheet, R-35, Senate Section 50? Can we do a combination motion where we move three sections at the same time? Ms. Berezovsky, any reason we can't? Okay, the language at R-92, Senate Section 125, and the language at R-93, Senate Section 128?
You know, I only have a two-page sheet.
The third thing on the first page.
Oh, I thought you said on page 3.
No, the third thing on the first page. Ms. Berezovsky.
Madam
yes.
Chair and members, there is a typo that was brought to our attention in on R-92, which is Section 125, the report section for the office. And it is at line on the Senate side, line 81.30. Delete pupil transportation and insert public.
Ms. Berezovsky, can Senator Olsen incorporate that into his motion?
And I would like to make that motion of response.
Senator Dibble.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that? What are we doing? The typo?
Madam Chair and members, on page R-92, it's the report section for this Section 125,
uh-huh.
Line 81.30.
Uh-huh.
Delete pupil transportation, insert public.
Yeah.
It should be the Department of Public Safety.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about public transportation.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The next section on the Senate offer was the canola hauling vehicles. I'll move the language on R-48, Senate Section 67. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. On booster seats, on page R-38 at lines 35.19 and 35.20, I'd like to move an amendment to restore a few of the words. I restore the words, a person while operating a taxi, and then add the word or, airport limousine, and leave the rest of the language stricken. So the new language would read, a person while operating a taxi or airport limousine. And this would be an exception to the booster seat provision and continue to be an exception to the car seat provision. Senator Olsen.
Madam Chair, is it true that if we put these exemptions in that we lose the federal dollars, or is it?
Senator Olsen, we lose the federal dollars related to the booster seat, but if we adopt the primary seat belt law, we get many more millions that can be used for the same purpose. Senator Olstein, I wouldn't be moving this exception except for the fact that I believe that we need this to pass this bill in the House of Representatives.
And that's our bottom line, is we need to get it passed. So I appreciate your input on that.
Any discussion to the amendment?
Well,
Senator DeVault.
Well, Madam Chair, I understand your point. I just need to articulate that taxis get into accidents. And, you know, kids are vulnerable in those circumstances. I will support your motion, but I think I won't support it forever, for the rest of my life. But I understand that.
Senator Dibble, I'd be happy to work with you in future years to remove the exemption I'm creating right now. But I really think in order to get this conference committee passed into law, or to the governor's desk anyway, I don't know what happens to it at that point, that we need to make this change. Any further discussion on the exception? House members? All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I would move the booster seat provision on R38 and 39, Senate Sections 54 and 55 as amended. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Are we missing any pages?
No, I just wanted to clarify that. That's where you do with the addition.
With the height exemption, yes. Any opposed? Motion carries. Mr. Chair, would you like to move the primary seatbelt language?
Madam Chair, I'll gladly move the Senate position on primary seatbelt.
Mm-hmm. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. The reinstatement for controlled substance offenses on R64, Senate Section 85, I'll move that language. Any discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. On the Transit Service Needs Implementation Plan, my understanding is Representative Morrow would like to move the House language.
Madam Chair, actually, with this, we have an amendment prepared.
You know what the...
I'll send it to Mr. Burris. Madam Chair, my concern was I preferred the House language with the words develop and implement, but I understand the concerns of our friends on the other side, and so I prepared this amendment to offer as an alternative course.
Representative Morrow, do you have a copy yet of the A69? Okay. When you get it, will you explain the A69 amendment?
It's members. What I'm seeking to do with the A69 amendment is to require that MnDOT also report on the capital and operating costs that would be needed to fully implement a transit plan, specifically concerned about the points that we raised concerning Greater Minnesota, as are discussed in the Transit Service Needs Implementation Plan in the section right above that, in Section 89. What I'm hoping that this will do is create an annual report in which the legislature will find out how underfunded our transit is in Greater Minnesota and how much money is needed to actually reach the goals stated in the implementation plans.
Ms. Parker, can I ask a question, please?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Betsy Parker from MnDOT. I haven't seen the amendment, so I don't know what the language looks like. I think you said annual, and it seems to me that if we're going to report on the capital and operating costs that are needed, it would make the most sense to do it every other year when we make the biennial budget, because we have to report then anyway. We have to propose a budget at that time. And that would be the normal time when the legislature would decide how much money we needed for these projects. And so it would make more sense, I think, to do it on a biennial basis.
Ms. Parker, if you could look at page R67 on line 60.11, if we changed the word annually to of every odd-numbered year, would that address the issue you raised?
Yes. Madam Chair, yes, I believe it would.
Madam Chair.
Representative Morrow.
Madam Chair, I'm going to speak against that change. I think that given the state of transit in Greater Minnesota, not hearing the objection to the annual transit report up to this point, I don't see a reason to now make it an every other year report. I do respect what Ms. Parker is saying about the budget cycle, but we were going to have a descriptive summary of funding sources and the like in this annual report, so I'm going to argue that it should remain an annual report.
Representative Hausman?
Mine isn't necessarily to this amendment, but just to talk about a conversation I was able to have with the new commissioner this morning, and one of his department, specifically on the issue of transit, not in Greater Minnesota, and was just quite delighted and impressed with a general spirit of a very different kind of an aggressive view, a look at the whole state, and a willingness to move towards state plans, and it was sort of a sea change from some of the conversations I've had in the past, and I was very encouraged by what seems like a real resolve on the part of the commissioner and the department to take a whole new and perhaps more aggressive look at. They even indicated that they have an interest in working with me on some of the governance issues around that. I think they realized one of the reasons we haven't moved very well and aggressively on the whole issue of planning, construction, operation, is that our governance structures don't work very well, and they don't work very well particularly when we have to work together with the metropolitan area. So it was a very encouraging conversation, I think, for Greater Minnesota to have heard.
Well, Ms. Parker and members, my goal is that we pass a conference committee report that the governor wants to sign. So I want to probe a little bit deeper to find out, is this a deal breaker the way that Representative Morrow has it drafted?
Well, Madam Chair, I don't know what to tell you about that, because we haven't had any conversation about it, and except that to us it makes a lot of sense to tell the legislature how much would be needed to meet certain goals on a biennial basis, and we have a mechanism for doing that in the biennial budget. There are other things we do where we're actually required to report in the biennial budget on certain things, and it just this sort of thing done on an annual basis when we operate under a biennial budget is it's a little bit out of sync, and it means extra work. And if things, since we have a biennial budget system, it to us just makes sense to work on that basis. It fits.
Representative Morrow, I love you, but I'm going to move the amendment, and if I lose, then I lose. But I think that since the House and the Senate set a budget in the odd-numbered years, it makes sense to get the report in the odd-numbered years, and we can't really do much about it in the even-numbered years. And so with the hope that this would create a willingness to do it, I would move the amendment to change at line 60.11 annually to of every odd-numbered year. Senator Murphy.
Madam Chairman, I just want to echo your concerns about getting a bill here that is going to get signed into law. And Ms. Parker, I also understand the department's need to try to keep things orderly. And for the most part, I think that we've always agreed. For the most part, I said. But I'm gonna vote for the chair's recommendation in this area. But you know, we we in the legislature, we depend on your department to give us good good and accurate information. And whenever I've asked you for that, I've always gotten it. Now, I can't say the same thing was true 8 weeks ago, not from you, but from other sources in the side of the department. But we just can't do our job if we don't have the information available. And, you know, none of us are the experts in this area. It's your department. And, you know, the more information you give us, the better we can help you be. So what I'm trying to say here is, even though it looks like it's going to be every 2 years to get this information, if you could kind of cobble something together so that we could look at it every year. It doesn't have to be an official report, but it has to be something that kind of goes to what Representative Morrow is looking for, because many of us in greater Minnesota, we need those transit services, and we need to expand you know, their rollout as soon as possible. And it's just not legislators from greater Minnesota. I think Representative Halsman and Senator Dibble would echo the same sentiment. But, you know, we're at a point right now in this conference committee that, you know, we were given some specific instructions. We're going to follow them as best as we can, and we want to get this done. But we're not going to throw anything in this bill that is going to be so onerous that the governor has to veto the bill.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, members, and Ms. Parker, I do want to share Representative Hausman's hopes for a positive working relationship with MnDOT, with the commissioner. And I trust that it won't come to a surprise to anybody that I have a great skepticism of reporting about Greater Minnesota Transit, especially as I represent a county that still doesn't have countywide transit. The 2000 report stated seven counties are without public transit. That's still true today. The report talks about the number of systems. Very few systems have transit after 6 p.m. in Greater Minnesota, Representative Murphy. I'm afraid that we're just going to get some more reports and not get more money that's needed. But with that said, Madam Chair, and I would probably vote against this amendment, but I would urge you to reconsider the amendment and to limit it to simply the cost elements that were part of my amendment, because if I understood correctly, MnDOT didn't object to an annual transit report. It was objecting to the capital and operating cost part of my amendment. So I would like to still see an annual transit report. If we want, if the will of the majority is to make it a biennial one for the operating and capital costs, I would ask you to limit your amendment to that.
Madam Chair, that would be fine with MnDOT. I think we should make this annual report to you. It was just the needs and the costs that I was expressing the concern about providing with the biennial budget, not the entire report.
So with that, then, could we ask staff to work out the language on that when we adopt this section? And I understand there's a technical fix on the A69 amendment we need to change on line 1.5, 61 to 60, and 31 to 29.
Madam Chair, before we
Senator Murphy,
before we adopt this amendment or this portion, Ms. Parker, can you state very clearly for the record what it is that you want this section to reflect, so that we're not at odds? Because we're going to be doing a lot of instructing staff to put things together so that we can sign it tomorrow.
And Mr. Chair, what I was imagining is it would be sub 5 and sub 7 that relate to money that would be the provisions that would be reported on in the budget years, and that the items at B1, B2, B3, B4, and B6 would be annually reported on. But I'm open to hearing a different interpretation of the money-related provisions.
Madam Chair,
Representative Moore.
I never heard that sub 5 was a concern for MnDOT, although I do see why you would identify sub 5. And I do also hope, Madam Chair, that we can clarify, what does that mean, that February 15, 2009 would be a reporting year under this amendment, or to be happening in 2010?
Madam Chair, I think that sub 5 identifies the amount of money that will be provided the operating and capital costs for each public transit system, which I think maybe we have in our transit report now. I'm not sure about that, though. And I understood this to be additional information that is additional to what is already required under this section about how much more money would be needed, or how much money would be needed to meet the...
the 80 and the 90 buffer.
To meet the transit service needs implementation plan.
So, members, perhaps it would be easier if I just suggested that we amend on line 60.27, right after the parentheses 7, close parentheses, and comma in each odd-numbered year. So is it just provision 7? Representative Morrow.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, to belabor this, but that means then the first report would be in 2011, because this doesn't become effective, I think, until August 1st, 2009. And the report is February 15th, so it means in February 15th, 2011, you get the first report. And that concerns me.
So we would like to get the first report in 2009.
Madam Chair?
Representative Morrow.
If I could ask Ms. Parker, would it be possible to get the first report February 15th, 2009, and then work on the odd number of years?
Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, do you mean the first report under the language that is here now, not including the operating? Well, that'll be a budget year anyway.
Correct.
I think so. I think so.
Representative Morrow?
Madam Chair, if MnDOT will agree to make the first report under sub 7 as amended February 15, 2009, then I'll agree to the every other year report on that section.
And I would just want to ask Mr. Burris or Ms. Berezovsky whether we need to change the effective date at 60.30.
Yeah.
And does anybody have a suggestion as to what we change that effective date to? January 1st, 2009? Does that work?
Madam Chair, Representative Morrow, we'll do the best we can to get that information to you in February of 2009, since it will be the first one we'll be doing like this.
So first, should we move the A69 amendment?
As amended.
Well, then we can move the amendment. I can move my amendment separately.
Sure. I'll move the A69 amendment.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion carries. I guess I have to bang that. Then on line 60.27, I think the language we want to add after the number 7 is, and beginning February 15th, 2009, in each odd-numbered year. And then change the effective date, strike August and insert January. So without the second and, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. All right, now let's move this section 90 of the Senate language on R67. That's a separate motion. So I would move section 90 on R67 and running over into R68. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Next, I would move the Met Council Disability Progress Report language. It's on R80. I believe it's sections 70 and 110 of the House language. I believe it starts on R80.
Section 110.
Is it in the Senate language also, then? Senator Dibble, are the House and Senate languages, Senate provisions similar here? I'm seeing quite different language at Section 70 and Section 110.
I think so, Madam Chair. I think it just tells us.
Ms. Berezovsky, what is the difference between the House and the Senate language on this?
Madam Chair, the original bill looked like the House language, but I noticed that in that Section 473.1465 is repealed in House file, the one that was just passed by the Senate over to the House, which was the 07 policy bill. So since that section of law is repealed, if that is enacted, then I thought it should be recodified somewhere else. So I moved it over to 473.13, but the language is the same. I don't know. The Met Council's here, and I know they haven't seen this probably. If they would want to comment on whether they have a preference between the two.
Does anybody from Met Council want to talk about this? Otherwise, Senator Dibble, would you like to move Section 110 of the Senate file?
Yes, Madam.
And R80. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Now we have the out-of-service enforcement powers. We have an amendment to that, right?
Madam Chair, I would offer up the A9 amendment.
Don't explain what it does. Is this no guns at MnDOT? The amendment?
Madam.
We did that first, and then we did this one. We didn't do 90. What's Section 90? We did Section 89. We didn't do. Where's 90? Yeah, that's the piece we did. We were dealing off of Senate language, so we that's what
we
I moved.
We had already adopted one of the two. I forget which one, but one of them had already
Okay. We just adopted, we're just clarifying what we just adopted.
I'll slow down.
That one? Yeah. Does everybody have the amendment? Senator Murphy, to the A9 amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, this is just for the out-of-service orders. This puts some specialized workers inside the Department of Transportation as having the ability to enforce this out-of-service order. And it's pretty straightforward. It talks about transportation program specialists and hazardous material program specialists of the department. They can't be armed, blah, blah, blah. I think Gene Halverson is the one that crafted this language up. So,
Senator Olsen.
Madam Chair, Senator Murphy, does that mean that they're always going to be working under the, I guess, the license of a sworn officer? If they don't have...
Maybe we should have Ms. Parker answer. Oh, she doesn't want to.
Ms. Parker.
Madam Chair, Senator Olsen, the employees of the Minnesota Department of Transportation who enforce motor carrier safety and hazardous material regulations do not work under the direction of a sworn officer because we don't have any of those in MnDOT, but they also do not stop trucks on the road. All of their work is conducted, except for certain number of inspections conducted per year to keep their truck inspection skills up, is conducted at motor carriers' terminals and offices in an audit and on-the-premises vehicle inspection function. If they are at a roadside, they are not pulling the trucks over themselves. They are working with the state patrol and are just inspecting trucks that the state patrol is pulling in. And their authority consists of being able to enforce all of these federal regulations and to write tickets under Minnesota law only for these provisions.
Well, so then if they're setting up at a scale, it's the patrol that's pulling the truck and saying, we want this one inspected.
That's correct.
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Murphy.
Renew my motion.
Senator Murphy moves the A9 amendment to Section 99. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy moves the Section 99 as amended.
Mm-hmm.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. So then we get to the repealers on R93.
Madam Chair.
Senator Murphy.
Well, I've got a couple notes here that that we had some tentative agreement on the first two of those bullet points. I just want to point out that the bullet point in the middle about the provision for duplicated by school bus driver education provision, this section 169. My understanding is that's a technical fix. And is that correct, Mr. Rosowski?
That's correct.
Okay. So, and I'll let Mr. Burris make sure he gets a good look at it too, but I would just like to move all three of those bullets at the same time and get them over with.
Senator,
I don't know if we adopted the first one and the third bullet point yet.
Senator Murphy, I'm looking at page R93. There's six different portions that are repealed, and in the Senate offer to the House, there's a specific discussion of three of the repealers, which we were okay with. Although I have a question for Representative Earhart on the fifth one, which is to repeal 221.121. But I don't know if we had already dealt with the first, the third, and the sixth repealer, because we seem to be talking only about the second, the fourth, and the fifth. Representative Earhart.
You want me to do what? Thank you, sir.
Representative Earhart, the repealer language on R93 repeals a section in the household goods provision, which becomes obsolete. And I'm not sure if that becomes obsolete because of the legislation you carried or whether that's just a cleanup. Mr. Burris?
Madam Chair and members, that provision goes along with the other household goods movers changes that the committee has adopted.
And it would be consistent with the other language to repeal this section?
Madam Chair, that's correct.
So did we repeal these? Did we adopt these other repealers?
Yeah.
So what's this one have to do with? Do you know?
The first one is designed.
What's the veterans?
Yeah. What's the third one? Oh. My son needs math. That's a kind of joint club thing. Okay, the first one is the same. The second one is the veterans.
What's the third one?
It's implementable.
Yeah, the third one's implementable. The fourth one is this repeal of some of that school bus.
And that is totally technical?
That one is. And then the last one's trains and taxis.
Okay. Okay. All right, members, I'm told by the experts here that the repealer language on R93, it refers to six different sections of statute. The first one refers to design build. And so we're going to set that aside for the moment.
Mm-hmm.
The second one refers to this veteran surcharge, which is related to license plates, right? The third section has to do with implements of husbandry, which I believe there's no objection to. The fourth one has to do with this school bus piece, and it's very technical from a Salzman bill. And the fifth one is the household goods mover repealer that Mr. Burris just explained. And the sixth one is a repeal of the transit taxing district, which we're also setting aside. So I guess I would move section 129 of the Senate bill, excluding the design bill statutory reference and the transit taxing district reference. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. We're going to set the Dimler amendment aside. My understanding is from the Department of Transportation that they are not interested in seeing this bill go to the governor's desk with the Dimler amendment on it, or the enhanced Dimler amendment. Is that correct? So in our continuing effort to get the bill signed, we'll leave that aside. Then we get to the really fun part to talk about. There are some changes to Chapter 152 that the legislature would like. There are some changes to Chapter 152 that the governor's office, or at least his Department of Finance and the Department of Transportation would like. I would like to put all of the Chapter 152 fixes in the bill. Senator Murphy.
Madam Chairman, I would oppose that, and I think that we should leave all fixes for the 152 out, including the ones that the department agreed to.
Ms. Parker, I'm wondering if you can speak to whether this bill has a better or worse chance of getting signed if we put the fixes to Chapter 152 in this bill.
And Ms. Parker, and this is an either-or question. You can either have them all, or you get none of them. So what is the, well, the department probably has a different perspective on which one they would want.
Right. Just in case you missed it the first time, I'm in favor of all, he's in favor of none.
Madam Chair, and to be fair to Ms. Parker, she's just the messenger here, and I don't mean to
totally agree.
Shoot at you, especially when you have protection in the back row.
Looking overly bubbly tonight.
But I can't see why the legislature would want to rectify any changes or would want to propose any changes to 152. That would be beneficial to the governor if the governor is unwilling to even sit down and talk to us about our need to change 152.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chairman, it's my understanding that the governor's office doesn't like any of those changes.
Members.
Oh,
Representative Morrow?
Madam Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chairman, Ms. Parker, what would MnDOT prefer?
Mr. Chairman, as you know, MnDOT is part of the administration.
I didn't think I could trip you up, Ms. Parker. Thank you.
Members, discussion to whether we include all or none. Nobody's made a motion yet, but There was an error made in drafting an amendment on the House floor when the House passed the Transportation Finance Bill. And the
I
error
wrote it, by the way. I just want everybody to know that I accept complete responsibility for that amendment. That's why you don't have amateurs do it. You have professionals.
And also, with regard to the bonding language, there's some language that probably would have been different if we were working on a cooperative effort with the governor to fund transportation. But because we were not in that position, there was a mistake with regard to that also. And so I think it makes sense to fix both of them. And I'm not sure if what I'm hearing is that the governor will veto the bill if we try to fix both provisions, or if I'm hearing that there's concern. I don't really know what that means. I'm very direct, so.
Well, Madam Chair, I can only say what my conversations were with the governor's office in regards to Chapter 152, and they would accept none of our provisions.
Well, I think the safety provisions in this bill are too important to risk subjecting to a veto, so. And I would, I guess, move past the Chapter 152 language.
Just out of curiosity, what are the outcomes without the fix?
There's slightly less road funding going to Hennepin and Ramsey County. The bonds that we made available for MnDOT to use to repair the fracture critical bridges would expire at the end of a year if MnDOT doesn't let all of the bonds. So they need to hurry up and let bonds or they'll cancel.
Madam Chair, what do you mean by bonds? $600 million for the first 2 years, or the 1. Whatever billion?
Representative Earhart, Mr. Burris could speak to that.
Madam Chair and members, there is a cancellation report that's required under state law that the Department of Finance produces, and this report identifies bond projects that have not proceeded. And the way that language is written is such that cancellation could occur for some of the bonds that are in the Transportation Finance Bill that was passed, because the way those bonds are appropriated is over the course of 10 fiscal years rather than the way bonds are typically done, where it's a particular specified project done up front. So the cancellation report is typically designed to, after a few years, pick up projects that really haven't gotten going. So the situation under current law is that some of the bonds would be canceled, and the bond funds could not be used because the appropriation would take place after when there would be a requirement of cancellation.
Madam Chair, can we get a ballpark figure on that? Are we talking about 1.2 or 3 billion, or are we talking about 100 million?
Madam Chair, members, back of the envelope calculation would be approximately $500
million. Is there anybody here from the governor's office that would like to speak to this issue? Anybody here from the governor's office? Anybody here from the governor's office? Well, I think we can close nominations. So we'll skip that language for now. With regard to the next section, which is handwritten 13 on page 2 of the Senate offer to the House, with regard to the transit taxing district, I suspect that that's not a provision that anybody would like to move at this time. Senator Dibble.
Once again, we have the unknowable. The full expansion of the transit taxing district will likely draw a veto from the governor. I don't know the answer if this will be extended to Lakeville. The Lakeville City Council is meeting this evening.
They passed it.
We have word from Lakeville City Council. They're in.
Yeah. Well, I would consider then extending the transit taxing district to Lakeville. That's the EPA.
I'm going to
I said I think we should consider extending the transit taxing district to Lakeville. That helps the UPA function in a way that makes sense. I am concerned about the language, and I guess I don't understand why it's even in there. It says nothing in the section prevents a local governmental unit from providing public transit service that extends outside the metropolitan transit taxing district. I don't know why we would adopt it. Especially if we take care of this Lakeville thing.
Is there somebody here that wanted to speak to that provision? I just saw him. Where'd he go?
Snooze, you lose. Let's move
Mr.
on.
Mr. Clark?
We have to go up the door, sir.
Senator Dibble, are you referring to the language on R81 in the House Bill Section 71, the Senate Bill Section 111?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Lines 47 on the House side, 27 on the House side, 74 on the Senate side.
Mr. Clark?
Thank you, Madam Chair. James Clark with the Suburban Transit Association. And Senator Dibble, thank you. This provision is not a provision that the Suburban Transit Association brought forward. This is a, as you can see in the side-by-side, I think staff has indicated that this merely clarifies that opt-outs may provide transit service that extends outside of the transit taxing district. If the conference committee decides to adopt it, that would be wonderful. I think it would be comfort for the opt-out providers, but again, it's not language that we brought forward or are seeking at this time.
I'm wondering if Mr. Schreiber can speak to the issue of whether we need this for North Star or not. My understanding is we did some language for North Star in a different bill.
This just relates to opt-outs, so it's in effect.
Yes, Madam Chair, this would purely be for opt-out bus service.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, the North Star situation is different because everyone who, you know, every place that the North Star Corridor passes through makes some form of capital and operating contribution. This means that the capital assets, the rolling stock, the fleets, would be that only people inside the transit taxing district pay for. Going outside the transit taxing district, perhaps these cities would be providing some operating on their own volition, but I think they'd be contributing to the capital effort, and that's an issue.
I just bring it up because it was in both the House and the Senate bill, and I'm not hearing anybody move it. Mr. Clark.
And Madam Chair, again, I don't think it's controversial language. There was, obviously, at your first hearing, there was controversy over expanding the transit taxing district to the 7-county area. The Met Council got up and said that they had issues with that. It's my understanding, after speaking with Ms. Venowitz and with Mr. Shetman, Met Council does not have any issue with this clarifying language, but again, this is not a provision that the Suburban Transit Association has brought forward. So, whatever the will of the committee is, obviously that's.
Representative Hausman.
Well, I just think there are so many questions. Anytime you provide service outside the taxing district, what does it mean about who pays? That I don't know why we would do this.
Exactly, Madam Chair. I don't know how this thing snuck into our bill to begin with.
Madam Chair.
Is that sneaky Representative Medor?
Madam Chair, I think that might be correct. Okay.
Well, and
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, I think the Lakeville thing solves some of this problem. So
excellent. Moving on page 2, number 14 refers to some Duluth language. I don't hear anybody moving that.
It's in Rochester language, Madam Chair. I would hope that the conferees on both sides of the table would just let MnDOT run their course on those two issues.
And then the 15th provision is Chapter 152 fixes sought by the administration. Number 16 is design build language. I understand that you have an amendment on that.
Madam Chair, we do have a design build amendment.
Would you like to offer that?
No. Madam Chair, I do have an amendment to the impounded vehicles.
Let's move on to get your stuff back.
And Madam Chair, working with Senator Dibble and some people involved in this issue, I think that we've got an amendment that is agreed to with all the parties. But I can real quick. Madam Chair, and I want to reserve the right to come back to design build here in a second, because there's a few things that I think that we need to.
Well, Mr. Chair, my plan is to keep this bill open until Clean Cars passes off the House floor, so I'm in no hurry.
Well, we may be here a few years. Madam Chair, basically what this amendment does, the impounded vehicle language starts in section, well, it's on page R24 of both bills. Working off the Senate language, section 29 is just, it's about an amount of time that has to go by before these titles can be changed because of the impound lot or the tow truck operator taking possession of the car. That's non-controversial. I think that everybody agreed to that. The next section, section 30, talks about notice. And these are just notice, when the notice has to go, who has to do the notice. That's pretty much non-controversial. The parts that were in controversy, and that goes on through on the next page. And then there's also section 31. There's a couple provisions in there that are good, all the way down to line 24-14. And then we're going to delete the next two paragraphs. Actually, the next three paragraphs, or I'm sorry, the next two paragraphs, and then also section 34. You don't need section 34 because we're taking out two sections above that on page 26. Those two, the idea of this was to make sure that poor people got the contents of the car back, right?
Yes.
Well, somehow we got in here, poor people, and then there was this paragraph starting on 24-15, going through 24-23. Got nothing to do with poor people. And then 24-24 through 24-31 is, once again, has nothing to do with poor folks that get their car impounded. So basically what we're saying is that everybody else, that classification where they're going to get their sunglasses and all this stuff back, they have to revert back to what the way it is now. If they've got, if they have no way of showing that they're poor, that means that they've got money to get their car out of impound. That's about it, Madam Chair. But I think that we hit what we wanted to. We're going to take care of the poor people. I'd move that amendment, Madam Chair.
Senator Murphy moves the A14 amendment. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Would you like to move the relevant sections of the Senate file then? The ones that we just amended?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move sections 29, 30, 31. And
32.
And Senate section 66.
32.
There's some remaining.
32 as
amended. Oh, yes, I'm sorry. 32.
And section 60 something?
And Senate language section 66. Yeah, that's the portion for the big tow trucks. Towing big vehicles. Yes. That's it right here.
Any discussion on the Senate provisions related to the get your stuff back and tow longer vehicles sections? Purely technical? Then we'll go to Senate. Mr. Burris, what's the technical problem between the House and the Senate language?
Madam Chair and members, there is a technical difference in the location of some of the language between the House and the Senate. the House, this is on page R24, the revisor side by side. It's in section 14 of the House language and section 30 of the Senate. This provision basically deals with the written notice requirements that's provided to the owner of a vehicle that's been towed. The Senate version also contains some waiver of rights language, and in the House, that waiver language is moved to a separate subdivision, which is located on page R26, section 17 on the House side. So this is technical in nature. It's essentially the same language and policy impact. The location and statutes is different.
Well, Madam Chairman, I would renew my motion and direct Mr. Burris to craft this the way he sees, the way he wants it to fit. Is that okay?
Madam Chair, members, that's fine with me.
There, now we're compromising with our staff, too.
Senator Olstein.
Madam Chair, on page R47, on section 66, the only question I would have is on 43.22, it says a place of repair or to a place of safekeeping. Mm-hmm. So there's no designation, you know, it could be a trucking company. Well, the truck broke down in Duluth. Are they towing it back to their shop in the Twin Cities, or are they towing it to the nearest place off the freeway? I'm just wondering if we should address that.
Well, maybe we can ask the major to come to the table and tell us what the State Patrol thinks. Well, maybe Ms. Parker.
Come on.
We're having fun now.
Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, I consulted with my protection and we decided I should answer the question. Actually, this tow truck permit language is in here at the request of MnDOT. We have had requests sometimes from tow trucks to haul heavy trucks that had broken down on the side of the road some distance, and our permit people thought that this was a reasonable request. And the commissioner, you can see it says in line 43.20, meets any other conditions prescribed by the commissioner. So we could talk to the owner of the truck and find out where they needed to take it and what would be a reasonable distance and put that in the permit so it could be tailored to meet the situation.
Oh.
Senator Olstein.
Because I would envision this. You break down on the side of the road and your tractor with, you know, maybe doubles, and so you got two trailers, and you just want to get it off the road quickly, so, you know, you would tow it off the freeway or whatever, state highway or wherever it is, not necessarily to tow it 100 miles to the shop. That's what I guess I would, was there any discussion on that?
Ms. Parker?
Madam Chair, Senator Olstein, that is exactly the situation this language is designed to cover. Because it's understood that they can tow it to get it just off the road someplace. But sometimes there are specialized pieces of equipment that need to go back to some particular place, or there's some unusual situation, and then this would give us the authority to issue the appropriate permit under the circumstances and make requirements about how far they could go, or even to route it if necessary to get certain kinds of equipment back to its home, if necessary, or a safe place for repair. And the commissioner could put conditions in the permit, so it could be negotiated by our permit staff.
Senator Olstein.
Thank you. So then in that scenario, the tow truck driver arrives on the site and they're calling the duty officer or something, or how does that work with that they would get a permit?
Madam Chair, Senator Olstein, normally this kind of permit would be used when the broken down truck has been removed from the road but needs to make a further trip to get to the place where it can actually be repaired.
Any further discussion on the Murphy motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair, and then we do have an amendment.
The rail plan one. Senator Murphy, maybe if we go to Representative Hausman,
okay, that's fine.
While Bonnie's talking to the revisers.
A70.
The A70 amendment. Do members have the A70
it
amendment?
Has not been distributed. And I have worked with the department on this. For both freight and passenger, they really cannot seek federal funding until there is a statewide transportation plan in place. And this amendment says the commissioner shall develop a comprehensive statewide freight and passenger rail plan as part of the statewide transportation plan. They'll provide a copy for review and comment to the chairs of the Senate and House committees with jurisdiction over transportation policy and finance. And the commissioner may expend money from the rail service improvement account, and you see on page 2, number 7, to fund rail plan studies. That is the amendment.
Madam Chair?
Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair, the only thing that I like this. The only thing that I would like, Representative Hausman, is if a copy for review and comment also go to the lead Republican on the appropriate committees. We can just ask staff to make sure. We've been trying to do that with all these.
And I don't know if the staff heard that, but that it's an appropriate change. There was one other thing we considered as part of this, and I think when they looked at the powers, we didn't know if they needed to be authorized to work with other state departments of transportation on this. And as they looked at their authority, we felt it's broad enough that, in fact, they have the authority to do that without legislative direction.
Ms. Parker?
Madam Chair and Representative Hausman, I talked to Mr. Burris about this, and we looked at two sections of statute, one having to do with the Midwest Rail Compact, and another section that said that we had, that the Department of Transportation or the commissioner had the authority to enter into agreements with other states. And we decided that that probably was sufficient to let us do what we needed to do.
And Mr. Chair, I think, or Madam
Chair, that'd be me.
Thank you tonight. I do believe that as they develop this, we are going to, for both freight and passengers, discover a much greater need for the use of rail transportation. Whole host of reasons, I think, to begin to plan for that.
Senator Yanhar?
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering where this bill was heard before and passed.
Representative Hausman?
In the bonding bill that was in both on the floor of the House and the Senate, we had this direction, this is a rather scaled back language that calls for a state plan or directs us a state transportation.
Senator Youngbar.
Madam Chair, if my issues that have been passed don't seem to make it in here. I certainly don't want to see something we haven't passed the exact language on in any House or Senate in the bill.
Senator Youngbar, my understanding is this language is substantially similar to language that was in the House and Senate bonding bill, and it has the same effect as the language in the bonding bill.
Scaled back quite a bit.
Call of the House. Oh, members, then I guess we'll be in recess to the call of the chair.
And perhaps in the meantime, counsel could find me that language so I could verify that it was.
I think I have copies here.
It must be about immigration.
Senator Young, I have copies here.
Healthcare, immigration.
I'm killing my language. This is a different name.
Oh, I know.
Starts here. I think the two relevant ones would be these two paragraphs.
It's always a little testy when my stuff is written as omitted, and then I see some new language.
Yeah, no, I totally get that. The commissioner shall develop a comprehensive
rail. And I wrote a part about the Midwest interstate.
Yeah. And this is the relevant one. The commissioner shall develop a comprehensive rail plan. Did you get this page?
Yes. Yeah. Including.
And we just.
It's
a little less specific.
That you're not, no,
yeah. Sure. No. 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 I totally get that.
Yeah. And that's. That's close enough to me.
Okay.
I might let you get away with it. Well, I don't think the governor's ever said anything against it. The House didn't stand it.
So we're maintaining
the letter because I'll be getting it on the House side. When you work on something for 4 years, it's hard to get the White House. Whether this appeared in the past, some places on this.
Senator Youngbauer asked Senator or Representative Hausman a question. Representative Hausman answered the question. Were we ready to vote then?
Yes.
I think there's an assumption that railroad workers and railroads and that as they put together that plan, that comprehensive freight and passenger rail plan, that all the parties would be consulted and at the table at the appropriate times.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question to the Representative Houston. And we're also thinking about those instances when the same track needs to be used for these purposes, correct? Is that kind of the idea? The reason I ask, because that was the source of a lot of debate and discussion at NCSL as they're trying to adopt the policy that NCSL.
And I had actually a whole paragraph, and it included things like the requirements for shared passenger freight corridors. But in a sense, putting that much in statute, that much direction, I think one has at a certain point a certain level of trust, I think, with the department that if it's a real transportation plan, that clearly those kinds of requirements for shared passenger and freight corridors would be obviously a part of how that happens. So, yes, I literally had a paragraph of that kind of concern, but it seemed like too much to write into statute.
Feel informed and ready to vote.
Mr. Appitz?
Madam Chairwoman, and members of the conference committee, my name is John Appitz. I represent the Minnesota Regional Railroads Association. This is a good idea. You need to do this. We haven't done this in 10 years. And we need to start, consistent with what Chairman Murphy said, coordinating our efforts in terms of railroads and working together. I just might mention one thing real quick and plead your sympathies for this cause. If you look at the second part of the amendment, what it does is fund rail planning studies out of the Rail Service Improvement Account. The Rail Service Improvement Account is an account that was established about 30 years ago in the Department of Transportation for the purpose of funding upgrades to short line and regional railroads that were spin-offs. Did some work this year, Representative Morrow in the bonding bill to do that for the Minnesota Prairie Line. But I just want to mention the fact that part of the offset to the budget deficit this year will come for transportation purposes out of the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Account, to the tune of about $6 of the $7 million that is there. And if I understand this correctly, the study that you have in front of you could cost up to $1 million. Doing the math, that makes the amount available in the rail service account kind of slim, kind of like zero. And I'd encourage you to think forward next year, Madam Chair.
We have to start filling that up.
To look
next
at that
year.
Account. And suffice it to say, we'd appreciate your sympathies and considerations on that. But please do this. This is very important.
Senator Murphy?
Well, Madam Chair, to that point, Mr. Abbas brought that concern to me earlier. I think maybe yesterday or the day before. They're all the same now. Anyway. I did talk to leadership to see if there was any chance that we could maybe tweak our budget fix a little bit to leave a little bit of that money there. And let's just say that there was a little bit of hesitation on their part. So our commitment to the folks in the rail areas, we'll try to kind of fix that up next year if we're given the opportunity.
Hold you to it, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
I'm sure you will.
Senator Youngheart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just going to say that, you know, I wasn't in favor of this amendment until Mr. Abbas came up and testified. Anything after 10 o'clock, you know, the longer the testimony, the less interest I have in the amendment. So I just was going to warn people for the future.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of the Hausman amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Senator Dibble.
Just to be clear, and that would include the amendment to make sure we're notifying the ranking party members of the
committee. And Representative Hausman incorporated that before we had to go to that call in the House.
I think the staff heard that.
And wrote it down. So the next part we are at, I believe, is the, do you want to do railway safety or do you want to do the transit ready bridge construction? Let's do this.
You want to do the railway?
They're all in the area of rail. Let's go with the railway safety.
Okay, Madam Chair, we've got...
we can share.
Yeah, we're going to have to share a little bit here.
You guys can share and they can share. Senator Murphy?
Well, Madam Chairman, there was... my understanding is that most of this is all worked out. I think that there might be one small issue that you know, we can take a little bit of testimony on. But basically what we did was we took the recommendations from both the groups that were kind of, you know, competing interests on this. Senator Dibble and myself had reached a point where we just said, we're going to pare this down and we're going to do it if you guys can't reach compromise. I think that that spurred him into reaching a compromise, or at least something that's pretty close to a compromise. And this reflects it. Senator Dibble can probably explain this a lot better than I can. There is some handwritten notes on here, and those are also the changes to the bill.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, the crux of the issues are, you know, establishing safe walkways, making sure they're built to a certain standard, that they're easy to walk on, walkways, you know, are you know, built in a way that deals with slope and drainage, et cetera. In those, only in those spots where employees are using the side of the railroad, need to be on the side of the railroad with some level of frequency. I think the outstanding issue is which of the railroads should be subjected to these standards. Class 1, Class 2, or Class 3s. We're proposing here that the Class 1 and Class 2, the issue is whether or not the Class 2 is some of the medium-sized or smaller railroad carriers, that there be a fairly straightforward process of notifying a railroad when there needs to be some repairs made or some walkway installed, and giving that railroad company an opportunity to abate the issue, deal with it before it goes to a full-fledged violation, or even worse, a full-fledged contested process. adversarial process. And then some caveats to allow for the unusual conditions. And then throwing in a new issue that was never the subject of any of the bills, but is a provision that allows agreement to occur, is this issue of trespass. And that's on the last page. And sure, we can have some testimony on why that's so important. But the truth of the matter is that trespass is probably the largest safety concern that railroads have. And that's a good reason. That's how most of the injuries and accidents occur when the public or people shouldn't be on rail facilities are there. That allows some opportunity also to create some clarity around whether or not collective bargaining representatives can make a certain nexus be on rail property. So that's kind of the 40,000, what we're trying to get to set of solutions.
Senator Dibble, in the compromise language, is there anything that could be interpreted to prohibit union organizing activities on railroad property?
Madam Chair, I think that's, I think the answer is no. I think definitely we'll clarify.
Now, most of the time, Madam Chair, unions try to do their business off of company property. Most of the time, when there's organizing to be done, we try to do that away from the job. So sometimes there's not an opportunity to do that, but generally speaking.
Senator Dibble?
Madam Chair, also existing practice for the most part grandfathered this prospect of not asking the railroads to go back and do this.
I don't know if members in your body heard a lot about this bill as it worked its way through the process, but members in the House of Representatives have certainly heard plenty about this. So if it's a compromise provision that's agreed to by both parties, I do not think we need any testimony. Is it a compromise provision agreed to by both parties? I just need a nod of the head.
Yes.
All right, are we ready to vote?
Well, wait a minute, Madam Chair.
Senator Murphy.
I just want to point out that the world didn't quit spinning.
It didn't. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
Thank you.
Motion carries. All right. I have the A68 amendment. I don't know who is the A68. Members, the A68 amendment is an attempt to take Senator Metzen's idea for the Lafayette Bridge and extend it to other bridge projects. We had a lot of public discussion and debate about the 35W bridge and whether we could make it light rail ready. And when push finally came to shove, we determined that it didn't cost a tremendous amount more money to make it light rail ready. And so this is an attempt to take Senator Metzen's very good idea and apply it to bridge construction more generally. Ms. Parker, have you gotten a copy of the amendment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, when I look at this amendment, I think it means that MnDOT is required to build every bridge in the metro area that's part of a project over $25 million to make it light rail ready. And I assume you mean, for example, the Stillwater Bridge, the Cayuga Bridge on I-35E, the Hastings Bridge, and even bridges that are not river crossings? Is that correct?
That's the intent of the amendment.
Madam Chair, this would be probably quite expensive and complicated to administer, given that there are not transit plans in place for most of these bridges.
Ms. Parker, do you prefer the Metzen provision with regard to the Lafayette Bridge?
Madam Chair, I think what we would prefer would be an opportunity for Commissioner Sorrell and Chairman Bell of the Met Council to talk about what would be an appropriate way to address the needs of transit consistent with highway planning in the metro area. And I think what people don't understand about the Lafayette Bridge is that, first of all, MnDOT is not the transit planning agency in the metro area. It is the Metropolitan Council. And there are four organizations now involved in discussions about the Lafayette Bridge. Dakota County has a study underway with the consultant firm URS that is not completed. City of St. Paul staff have told MnDOT staff that they do not want light rail on the Lafayette Bridge. They want it in another corridor. The Met Council hasn't finished its transit planning yet, and the department has been working with a Robert Street citizens group that has some things to say about the process, too, and it puts us in a very difficult position of just not being ready to deal with this. And if some of these groups came together and some decisions were made before final design started in a year or so from now, it would probably be easier to address.
Senator Youngbauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm against the amendment, but I think more importantly, as we think through this, and I'm probably arguably one of the hardiest multimodal advocates in the Senate, at least in the Republican side for sure, but we need an overall comprehensive plan within the metropolitan area that identifies what we're going to use for transportation options in the future. We can't just, I agree with Ms. Parker on this one, we can't just haphazardly say every bridge should be ready for this. And I think this is the argument that conservatives make against this, is we want to plop down a rail or a light rail or a bus route anyplace. It doesn't make sense. And that actually comes into play, even with the complete streets, is that you got to figure out where these corridors work. And you got to have a long-range plan. And that's why we get so many people trying to say we shouldn't do it. We're not planning it right. We got to get Met Council working with MnDOT and working with the counties and stuff. And we have to be able to sell the public and say, guys, we haven't thought this through in the past, but we need to do a complete intensive study that identifies it.
I was so ready to respond, but I think Senator Dibble would like to respond.
Well, hit the rewind. The speech I've given 4, 5, 6 times this year. That's the question, Senator Gumbauer. Why aren't MnDOT and Met Council coordinating their planning? We had the same thing when we talked about BRT and I-35 expansion of from Lakeville. Can't do it. Got the plans. Got plans.
We
can't
stop
possibly.
Right there. We need to kick them in the butt. We need to get it done. They all got to work together.
We're building the bridge. We don't. I think conservatives would also make the argument that it's pretty dumb to go build a really expensive separate facility. We have some foresight to do some meaningful planning. We would have a rail corridor out of the Apple Valley across the Cedar Avenue Bridge if it had been built the way that it was intended to be. Mm-hmm.
And in the Lafayette Bridge case, it's $7 million to make it light rail ready. And the cost of building another bridge to bring light rail across that span of river is intense, to say the least. Well, members, I will withdraw the A68 amendment. I don't know if anybody wants to move the Metzen language with regard to the Lafayette Bridge, but my sense is that that's problematic.
Madam Chairman, it looks like that language is problematic. And members, I'm going to make the prediction now that this bill is going to get vetoed regardless. Because the governor's office just told me that you can have two of the three safety items, but you can't have all three. So we have to decide whether we want seat belts, graduated driver's license, or booster seats, or what combination we want. But we can't have all three.
Senator Murphy, I think the way to phrase it is, do we want adults to die, do we want teenagers to die, or do we want children to die? That's the question.
I don't know. I think that I wish the governor was sitting at the table there. I would like to know what his logic is behind that, because that is absurd.
Well,
Representative Earhart.
Why don't you figure out who dies from each of those occurrences on a yearly basis, and then let him decide. Give it to him on a platter and say, you pick the two.
Is there anybody here from public safety that can tell us which two of the three we should be doing? What are the preferences?
Do we have to go for a call right away, or can we stall a little? Let's wait till the sergeants make it all the way up here.
Yeah.
Is it Ms. Marty?
Madam Chair, I'm Sheree Marty with the Office of Traffic Safety, with the Department of Public Safety. And the opinion of our agency would be, in fact, that we would certainly primary seatbelt, number one. Graduated driver's licensing, number two. We look at what are causing the greatest amount of traffic fatalities and serious injuries, and there's no question that's primary seatbelt and graduated driver's licensing. With primary seatbelt, we're looking at over 200 traffic fatalities a year, over 600 serious injuries a year. With graduated driver's licensing, we're looking at 80 teenagers a year in Minnesota dying, and we're looking at hundreds that are seriously injured.
Thank you.
I've given the choice. Is there more information you may?
Is that is that a cost issue that the governor would want only two of the three? What would the issue be?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I don't think I could comment on what his issue would be. Clearly, they're all needed. All three are needed. Minnesota is only one of four states that does not have a CPS law. But I clearly think the two that I've mentioned are the ones that are the biggest issue.
See you guys later.
Do we have to go, or can do? Is there a choice in this? Oh, we're on passage. All right, members, we're in recess. I don't need to vote on
all these. Okay. I'll never let primary seatbelt be less than number one now. Primary has got to be number one no matter what.
We're not going to be able to finish the work of the committee tonight. We have 25 minutes to 12. We have this new twist thrown in by the governor's staff. I believe it was a staff to Senator Murphy. What I would like to request that the governor or a member of his staff appear before the committee when we next convene to explain to us the rationale behind the two out of three proposal. Senator Murphy?
Well, Madam Chair, I think that would give us a better understanding where the governor's at, and then if we can get one of his representatives here, maybe we can talk about a couple other things that we've left unresolved because we haven't been able to open up those discussions with the governor's office. So I guess we wait till tomorrow.
Discussion? Representative Hausman.
Well, I wondered if the department has been clear to the governor's office how accommodating this conference committee has been. I mean, I think the two chairs have been rather exceptional in your willingness to drop just about anything, and I saw you on such a clear path. We certainly were taking our lead from you that this was something that you wanted to very carefully move through the various
danger zones, and we were doing that until that very last moment. And I don't know if that has been communicated to the governor's office that this really, that the conference committee has come with a fairly significant sense of cooperation on this issue. They aren't here in the room, and so one would just hope that there has been that kind of communication to them.
Well, Representative Hausman, I think we continue to feel our way in the dark here. I think the committee was working very hard to be fair-minded and bipartisan and kind of walk right down the middle with this bill, but in the absence of any input, all we can do is guess what might be offensive and what we've heard might be offensive. So I think it's time to quit wandering around in the dark and just have somebody from the governor's office come and say straightforwardly what they're willing to accept and what they're not willing to accept, because I think the work that we need to get done in this bill is too important to continue to guess at what the governor might or might not do.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, the only thing that we had talked earlier, and this is in regards to the state patrol and the decal fraud that is going on. Now, we have, you know, in the Senate, we've got committees with jurisdiction, especially when you implement a new felony. And I was asked by the chair of that committee that if it was a gross misdemeanor instead of a felony, that would be acceptable to them, and they would not raise any objections. And if the state patrol can put their arms around a gross misdemeanor instead of a felony.
Madam Chair, so
the
you can accept that.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Chair, that's about all. And Senator Dibble, please.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair, on the transit taxing district, I was wondering if we could hear from the Met Council. Mr. Shetland's here. He was out of the Lakeville City Council meeting. Maybe we can understand your indulgence. I'm sure what
sure.
happened and what action, if any, we need to take in this bill to reflect the understanding of what happened.
Mr. Shetton.
Thank you very much. My name is Judd Shetton. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Thanks for the opportunity to be here and to talk about the taxing district. Tonight I was at the Lakeville City Council meeting. They voted 5-0 to come in voluntarily into the taxing district. When I was at the meeting or driving up here, apparently there was discussion about putting Lakeville into the statute as far as the cities that are included in the taxing district, and maybe I have that wrong, but if there was that discussion, I would ask that the committee would wait to include Lakeville into the taxing district until next year. There is a deal that the council has to make with Dakota County and the Joint Powers Board, the County Transit Investment Board, to pay for the operations of the UPA. There is a very, very, very slim chance that that will not occur. I would say that is very slim. But if we are not able to do that by December 4th, when the council certifies their levy, the Lakeville coming to the taxing district will be null and void. Now, I think that is extremely, extremely I highly doubt that will happen, but they're coming in to the taxing district at 50% in the first year, 100% in calendar year 2010. That is because in calendar year 2009, the operations for the park and ride facility that we're talking about on 35, just south of the split, doesn't start until September. So we negotiated the 50% the first year, 100% from that point on. The City of Lakeville does not have the opportunity to rescind their voluntarily coming into the taxing district. It is only dependent on the council making sure that we have that operating agreement. As you know, next year is a budget year, and we will be in front of the committee, and it is in our best interest to make sure that we have this deal in place before we get here, because I'm sure there are a number of people who won't be very happy with us if we don't have that taken care of, and I understand that. So we will get a deal with the County Transit Investment Board before that.
Senator Murphy, did you have any words to say about when we might meet tomorrow or where?
Well, I'd be here in the Capitol someplace. I'm not real sure about the room. We do have, Senator Olsen has a bill up in finance tomorrow. We're going to try and get that moved to the top of the agenda. And that's on the technology surcharge, the $1.75 to build a new computer for GDS. If those discussions go pretty well, I think that we would be ready to meet around 11 o'clock.
Representative Earhart.
I have an amendment. First, I have a question for Mr. Shedman. Is there any advantage to either Lakeville or the Metropolitan Council awaiting their action or us taking action or whatever?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, I don't think there's any advantage either way. I think that Lakeville is in the taxing district, and the council has to make sure we get this operating deal in place, and all the pressure is on us right now. The thing driving this is the Urban Partnership Agreement. We have to have the facilities that we've committed to the federal government built and those operations in place by the fall of 2009. So we are committed to getting this done, and I think that it is too early to write Lakeville into the taxing district because the council needs to meet our commitments, and we have a lot riding on this, so I can assure you that we will make sure that that occurs.
Well, I guess, Madam Chair, I was wondering, why don't we write them in, and whatever happens then with the other agreement?
Madam Chair, Representative Earhart, I think that because we've got the agreement that they come in at 50% in the first year, that it would take some additional language, that I think it might be easier if we work this out and then next year come back and put Lakeville in the taxing district. I think that that is probably the safest way to do this. And I understand that the legislature would like to make sure, this committee would like to make sure that that is taken care of. I think that it can be taken care of. I would just let all of the moving parts fit into place before we do that. And I hope that that's satisfactory to the conference committee.
Representative Earhart.
I was going to make a motion. Is it appropriate for me to do that about that?
Representative Earhart, I suggest at 11:45, if you want to make a motion out of courtesy to the governor to remove something from the bill, that it might not be successful. And so I would suggest you might be more successful in the morning.
I don't think the governor's going to change his mind.
I think the committee might feel like being more accommodating tomorrow. Representative Hausman?
Good luck.
If I understand correctly, in other words, there is extreme pressure for you to get this one corridor built in a year, and that Lakeville's going to sit there and make sure you fast-track the construction of one corridor before it comes through with its commitment to actually pay for it. Is that what I'm understanding?
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, I think when we talk about fast-tracking the one corridor, we're talking about the 35W corridor and then the 35 just south of the split. When we talk about fast-tracking that, there are a couple components to the fast-track of the corridor. Number one are the park-and-ride lots that the council is responsible for. We've identified the spaces that we're going to be building these. The other piece to this is really MnDOT's piece, where we talk about the dynamically priced shoulder lanes and making those conversions from HOV lanes to hot lanes. Yes, we will be accelerating that, but I view this as a very positive thing because these are our transit ways that we have identified in the council's 2020 and 2030 plans. These are both Tier 1 transitways, which we had anticipated being built. These are also transitways that the Joint Powers Board, and which is now the County Transit Investment Board, have identified as what they would like to see fast-tracked as well. I mean, that's why when the legislature gave the counties the ability to pass the quarter-cent sales tax, this is to do exactly this type of these types of investments, and the fact that we have the urban partnership agreement in hand, it actually takes some of the pressure off because we are getting a significant amount of federal dollars to help speed this process through. But Representative Hausman, you are right. This is fast-tracked. But as far as the council's portion, we are talking about those park and rides, and we have the ability to build them in that time. It's just that we need to get this legislation passed in order for us to access that federal dollars.
And I just think it's so admirable that that this agency is so concerned about losing this $133 million of federal money that they're appearing at all meetings and urgently urging us to act in time so we don't jeopardize losing $133 million in federal money. Of course, there's still this little matter of $450 million that nobody talks about, but this particular project, we have all sat through lots of meetings to make sure that we are stay quite on schedule, because $133 million in federal money would be a lot to lose. And a state certainly would not want to be responsible for losing that much federal money.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And Representative Hausman, you make a very good point. Mr. Shetland, I want you to report back tomorrow on what the possibility of a governor signing the UPA agreement with our Chapter 152 fixes on it, because that's exactly what we're going to do. We're taking 152 out of this, and we're going to put it on the UPA agreement.
Madam Chair, Senator Murphy, I am happy to have that discussion.
All right.
All right, members, I think if we don't get out of here soon, people aren't going to be safe to drive. So,
I'm looking around, Madam Chair. Some of them aren't.
Already wake up, get some coffee. I just request that somebody from the governor's office be at the hearing tomorrow so we can determine what should be in and out of this bill, and the rationale for making choices like whether adults will live or teens will live or children will live. Why can't we save all three of them? That, members, we're adjourned.
11:00.
How are you doing? No, but what? Yeah, he's here with it. That's it. Supposed to read this guy's mind. I'm not psychic.
Thank you.
That's a brilliant.
Did you see him? I thought we were going to get the AED. He's starting hard again.
Very creative. Very serenity.
I thought you would think it was.
Yes.
What are the chances of that?
Probably small.
For those of us who have been in service, if your name all comes to mind.
Should we sub you back in? Maybe now that you're here.
Do you want to get somebody to work on the real walkways, or do you want
me to? I want to get someone in my office.
Governor doesn't.
How many votes did they get out of
So who's going to come?
I will be here.
Wanted to tell team transportation that the overall did pass the test.
Faster than the Senate has passed stuff.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? This sounds like a new rock
Jeremy in the state.
Oh! Ladies and gentlemen, would you please welcome back to St. Paul, Jeremy and the stakeholders! We have the same sense of the absurd.
Anybody wants this?
Ear ate my eye!
You're
going to
have two
colors
to choose from.
It's like last night in the lips.
I will go with the softy.
Okay. Oh, well, that's good. Money up, money up.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Amanda, do you want to walk with me to my car and then I'll drive you to your car? And then
well, you know what?